Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the stars, creators, and industry leaders keeping theater alive during the pandemic. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Sarah Bellamy. As the artistic director of the Penumbra Theater in St. Paul, Minnesota, Bellamy is leading the historically black theater company as it evolves over the coming years into the Penumbra Center for Racial Healing. It's a plan that has been in the works since well before the murder of George Floyd, and it's a model that retains its focus on theater and art as integral instigators of change, while at the same time responding to the community's needs around physical and mental health, and pushing for equity through activism, training, and policy work. Bellamy is in the virtual studio with me to tell us about all the ways the Penumbra is evolving, offering us a glimpse of an organization that might serve as a model for theaters around the country. Hey, Sarah, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Before we start talking about the ways in which Penumbra is evolving, I wonder if first, for the listeners who maybe don't know the company and its work, if you could start off talking a little bit about kind of the history of the company over its 44 years and, you know, the ways, the roles it's played both in the community locally and nationally.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Penumbra Theater is a 44-year-old African-American theater company located in St. Paul, Minnesota, on unceded Dakota land. We are inside the Hallie Q. Brown Martin Luther King Center, which is actually a community center that was sort of gifted to the Black community when the city was doing some sort of reparative work after our major interstate bifurcated the Black community that was here. So we're in an historic African-American community and inside a community center. And we produce work by, for, and about Black folks, but everyone is welcome to join us to witness that work. And our artistic company includes just really incredible artists, directors, playwrights, writers, scenic designers, the most notable of which is probably August Wilson, two-time Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright, who got his first professional production at Penumbra.
I mean, that's you can actually take credit for launching August Wilson. I mean, it seems like
we certainly helped.
Yeah. And tell us a little bit also about the audience. Where do they, are they primarily local to the city, at least? What's the makeup of the folks who come?
Well, so it's interesting. Our audience is a mixture of people who have been coming to the theater for that entire time. And then folks who sort of come based on the projects that we're working on. So I think there's kind of the standard and the rotating, which might be similar to many of the theaters that are around us. Something that is different about our audiences is 45% of our audience is African-American, which is the highest, at least in Minnesota, amongst theaters. And I would say, you know, there's probably 10% who don't identify as Black, but are people of color, and the rest are white folks. And so I think one of the things that's pretty unique about it is when people come to see plays, depending on the mix of people in the room, their experience witnessing the work is going to be different depending on the demographics of the audience, because people have different cultural responses to witnessing work. So that's fun.
Yeah. And what prompted its founding back? I mean, you mentioned the interstate, but what, it's a community center. What, whose idea was it that there needed to be a theater company associated with it and in that facility?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the building sort of dictated the birth of the theater, I think. When I was a little girl, I remember going to the space that's now Penumbra, and there was an auditorium space. There were music halls where people would play piano and violin. There was a dark room. There was a kiln. I mean, there were all of these different spaces where people could engage in the arts, because I think this community center, the people who envisioned it, understood that the arts are an essential part of wellness for a community. So my dad was hired, I think, in 1974 to administer the arts program.
Right. Yeah. I was just going to say, oh, actually, we should clarify that you have a very personal connection to the creators of this theater. Yeah,
yeah, my dad is the founder, and he and a group of local artists really wanted to create a space where they could add dimension to the African-American experience, because most of what was being presented on local stages was pretty stereotypical. And so he was given a budget to create an artistic program, and they launched their first professional play in 1976, which was Eden. And it was off to the races from there.
Right. And how did you experience, what was your experience of the, of Penumbra as a kid? I mean, it seems like you sort of grew up with it for your whole life.
I did. I joke that Penumbra is like an older sibling. but yeah, I mean, I can't describe how magical it is to have a professional theater to go to when you're small, and to watch artists working, and to climb around in the costumes and, you know, see the magic get made, even though I know and have known for many years how all of the levers and the, you know, where everything is, I'm still, when that curtain comes up, I'm still mystified. There is a, like a third element that, that is present every night that is mind blowing. But I think as a little girl, it, it emboldened me to dream and to be creative and to feel really connected to Black community, which was important to me, for my own racial identity development.
And you took over the theater about 3 years ago, is that right?
Officially, yeah. I was brought in as a co-artistic director in 2012, and then my father retired at our 40th anniversary.
Yeah. When and how did you decide to go into the family business? How early on in your life was that a decision made?
I think it was not a conscious decision. I sort of worked there, you know, from like 15 on in different capacities. So I've house managed, I've, you know, cleaned dressing rooms, I've worked backstage, front of house. And I think in my mid 20s, you know, my dad started really having conversations about succession and retirement. And that takes time for a founder, you know, that can take years for a founder to come to terms with retirement. So we started having the conversation, and I wasn't really keen on it until I started to see that I could play a role as a segue, really, to, because founder transition can be hard on organizations. And I felt like I could really play a role that would be a softer transition from a founder to a next leader.
Right. Yeah. And as I think a lot of theater folks listening will know, August Wilson, who you mentioned, made a speech, you know, almost 25 years ago about that mentioned, that talked very much about the importance of Black theaters and, you know, theaters that concentrate on Black artists and Black audiences and work for Black folks. And he noted the sort of extreme divide in recognition and funding and all of the things between the audience, between the theaters that, you know, cater to predominantly white audiences and those sort of, you know, Black focused theaters. How much of what he said now 25 years ago still remains true?
Far too much of it. Far too much of it. And that is so much of my work. I mean, I think a lot of people think as an artistic director, you curate the seasons, you know, you produce the work. That is all true, but I learned very quickly when I entered into the artistic directorship at Penumbra, a legacy Black institution, that probably a good 35-40% of my work would be activism to shift trends within philanthropy that undercapitalize arts organizations of color. And and so what August shared in that speech was, it was ground shaking, but it's not new, you know? And I always say my dad, he spent 40 years trying to convince people. And I've been in the business 15 trying to convince people. And, you know, I think we're finally starting to see the trends shift. The Ford Foundation, American Cultural Treasures initiative is really important. And I think there's other initiatives that are really, for the first time, doing something about the data that we know that that there's such great disparity.
And that sort of leads into your vision for Penumbra going forward and the Center for Racial Healing. Tell us a little bit about how that started. It sounds like it existed as an idea for you well before the events of the last year.
I began working on it in 2015. As I was trying to think about the next life cycle for this organization. And there were a couple of things that were guiding my inquiry. One, I wanted for Penumbra to, continue to be relevant. I understand why it was needed and necessary in 1976. Why is it needed and necessary today? Mm. Two, how do I address the disparities in the market and try to open up more diverse and different business streams, both earned and contributed income opportunities for the organization. And then finally, I was really curious about how I would show up as a leader because I'm not my father. He has, right. He has different gifts than I do. And I wanted to, think about what I could contribute. And this racial healing practice is something that I've been dedicated to for a long time. So we were on the way there and then, George Floyd's tragic murder sort of catapulted us along into the work.
Did that push the timeline for you? Did you but you hadn't moved that far ahead on the timeline at that point?
That's right. So what kind of happened, it was both serendipitous and really awful. So the first thing that happened was the pandemic. We closed the theater. And I had been saying the year prior, I really wish we could take a dark year. I wish we could take a year just to plan. My managing partner at the time said, I just don't think we're going to be able to swing this because so much of our funding is program specific. This is why general operating support for arts organizations of color is so essential. So we said, we'll just try to parallel plan the strat work. And then the pandemic happened. Lo and behold, we were shut down. So we had new room to do the strategic planning work. Our initial timeline, I think, to announce was probably several months down the road. But when George Floyd was murdered, the scars that were opened here, the pain that was so evident, and the incredible amount of activism and uprising. And, we wanted people to know that Penumbra would be a resource and that we'd be working in partnership with leaders here to ensure that that we do better as a state.
Right. Yeah. For us, the murder of George Floyd and everything that came after it is a national event. But I feel like St. Paul is so close to Minneapolis that I wonder how much of it felt like a local event for for the theater and its community.
I mean, it's incredibly local. It's local. It's localized in some really profound ways. Not only do we have company members who have lost family members to police shootings and police violence, we have company members who are connected to the Floyd family. We have people who live in and around the precinct and that area where everything was burning and where, anarchists were coming through and intimidating people. We have activists in our company who were holding space for community and bringing badly needed goods and supplies and triaging. We were extremely proximate to it. And I think the thing that's interesting about it is we know nationally that this is not an episodic thing, that every summer there's this spate of death, unfortunately, for the African-American community. But having it that close and having the uprising be so intense, that was new. That was new. I remember reflecting. So I have a new baby. He was just a few, he was young when George Floyd was murdered. And I remember nursing him. And then I remember reflecting on my four-year-old and nursing him when Philando Castile was killed. And I just had this profound moment of this is what my babies are being born into. And how do I protect them?
And so then initially right off the bat, how did Penumbra respond? And then how did that move into your vision for moving forward with your vision for the Center for Racial Healing?
Well, the first thing that we did was hold space for artists because we were in the midst of actually a beta test on a racial healing artist institute. And we got word on the call that day and changed the agenda and just did the work we were dreaming about, the racial healing work in that virtual room. Mm-hmm. It was profound. It was deeply painful. It was healing. It is not done.
Right.
So there was that. And then I think the thing that I felt compelled to do as sort of the institutional voice of the organization was to just ask for patience while we grieved, because I think everybody wants to ask Black community and those moments, what do we do? What's next? How do we just needed to grieve. We needed a little space where we were allowed to process our emotions, because that's part of mourning. That's part of getting better and stronger. So those were the two kind of immediate things. And then we started working with artists to support efforts to hold community, you know, whether that right. was creating art projects that could raise awareness, writing essays, volunteering to deliver goods, donating to food shelves. I mean, there was a bunch of stuff that we were doing yeah. practically and artistically.
I'll have more with Sarah right after the break. Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. And now, here's more with the artistic director of Penumbra, Sarah Bellamy.
Tell us more about the specifics of your vision for the Center for Racial Healing. Sort of what will it do that you're not doing already? Or what is it expanding that only exists in, you know, a less broad form now?
Yeah. So Penumbra's art has always been sort of a portal into difficult conversations and to acknowledging the beauty and atrocity of our American history. And I think I was always concerned when you open that channel in people and then they leave the theater, it's like, oh, where are they going? Are they going to be okay? You know, like, how do we actually kind of extend our arms around them a little bit longer and then embolden them now that you feel your way into this reality that other people are experiencing? Let's equip you to be able to do something. So for me, the essential equation that's going to guide the Center for Racial Healing and all of the program and curricular design is that you need the art. You need bold, beautiful art to dream liberation, to dream our way into things that we haven't yet experienced. We need wellness so that these bodies, which are taking on the toxic stress of racism, which we know are directly attributable to chronic diseases like hypertension, certain kinds of cancers, stroke, heart attack. All of those things, by the way, make us more susceptible to COVID-19, right? How do we actually tend to these bodies so they can relax and reset and bring that parasympathetic nervous system back online and feel safe in our bodies? So that wellness component. And then the equity piece for me is like, now you've got these people who are dreaming big and they're starting to feel well in their bodies. We need the world to be safe and ready for them. So how do we enact policy? How do we habituate practices so that the world is ready to and more compassionate? So that's the work. Art, wellness, equity equals racial healing.
And how much of... Can you give us a sense of what that expansion, like sort of how much you envision your staff expanding or your operating budget or your, physical space? But what are the kind of some of the specifics in terms of the ways in which it is growing?
Yeah, all of that is like being built right now. I mean, I think what we do know is that the theater will continue. We will continue to produce. I think we might produce a little bit differently. We're really ramping up our commissioning programs so that we can support artists who are kind of making work about the moment. I will always, as long as I'm there, commit to producing classics out of the Black theater canon, because I think that's a real important role for Penumbra. Mm-hmm. But what we don't have physically, we do not have the wellness space that we need. You know, I hope that.
And what would that look like, actually? Let me interrupt. What would that look like?
I mean, I hope if you can imagine a place, a beautiful retreat center where you can come in and there's a full service spa, where there are meditation rooms, where there's open rooms where people can hold space, whether they want to attend a yoga session, conduct one, you know, like it should be usable for us to program and for the community to program. So, beautiful housing for artists to come and be in residence for us and actually be able to retreat from the busyness of their lives. That's the wellness side. The racial equity programming for us is about developing leaders. And I think that, you know, if you can imagine this, going to a place where you could have a great meal, see a play, have a powerful conversation about it, and come back later in the weekend to hear a seminar or get a massage or, you know, like a place where you're actually continually being replenished and challenged and nurtured. That's what we're hoping to create.
Right. And is there often nonprofit organizations will launch a capital project, you know, a fundraising project to sort of start raising the funds to, in many cases, to, you know, expand their building or build a new building or whatever. Is there one attached to the Center for Racial Healing or and will there be?
I think we're about 18 months out of a capital campaign. But yeah,
okay.
We'll need to raise money in order to realize this vision for sure.
Right. And how, actually, one thing we haven't discussed yet is sort of how big your theater, like how big is the house? And do you have just one space or is there more than one?
We have one space.
That's what
we
I thought.
We have a 260 seat house. It is very intimate. In fact, when we go and play in other theaters, for example, when we've co-produced with the Guthrie, our audience always miss that proximity to the art, you know? But yeah, one space and... And we typically do 4 to 5 shows annually.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so what do you imagine materializing first in terms of your plan to go forward? What is the first sort of new initiative that you feel like will come online as we look ahead in the coming months?
Well, we've already started piloting some of the programming. The way that I tend to work is to kind of create a test kitchen and then build off of that. So one of the programs that we've already launched is called the Ashe Lab. It's an interdisciplinary space for artists to both retreat and then create really powerful art that speaks to this moment. So there's a cohort already in practice right now, and we're learning a great deal from and with them. Our racial equity programs are already available. And we moved them all to the virtual space in April.
Right.
So we train, you know, we train people all over the world now because of the virtual, you know, opportunity.
That was actually one of my questions, was how the sort of digital initiatives that were kind of prodded by COVID have, do you envision those furthering the work you're doing in general?
Absolutely, in the racial equity space. I'm so loath to try to make art in the virtual space. I find it deeply frustrating, but I also really miss it. And there's been some moments where we've had some real breakthroughs and power, but I just don't know if it translates, you know? So we're going to have a holiday concert coming up and we'll see how we go with that. But I miss live productions, and I'm trying to hold everything I can until we can be back in person.
Yeah. And as the evolution that Penumbra is going through right now is all happening at a moment when we nationally in the theater industry are talking about the ways in which the industry can and should change in order to increase equity, how much of what Penumbra is doing do you see as specific to your theater in particular? And how much do you imagine serving as a model for what theaters can do all around the country?
Well, I hope that what we do will be useful for other folks. You know, I think the more people trying to support racial equity efforts in this country, the better. I mean, we need everybody in this work. I also think that it requires a great deal of discernment. So I don't see this as a moment where predominantly white institutions should concentrate on targeted, and I'm putting air quotes up, targeted outreach to communities of color at this time. I actually feel like a much more powerful role for them would be to do some in-reach with white patrons to help practice having conversations about racial equity. That feels like a big swath of folks that we need to make sure are in the conversation. So I think it requires discernment and to understand where you can be the most potent and contribute the most to this national effort.
Yeah. Yeah. That actually, you beginning to answer the next question I had, which was what sort of blind spots do you see in the national conversation that you feel like we should be paying attention to that we're not?
Well, I think honestly, the American theater is lagging behind as a whole. The whole ecosystem is lagging behind philanthropy right now. And that wasn't the case maybe 2 years ago. Philanthropy is willing to acknowledge the disparity, but I think the business imperative in theater is not allowing certain organizations to really embody their participation in the inequity of the ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So they haven't quite figured out how to pivot to support more equitable relationships. And they many leaders want to. I'm on the phone with people all the time about this. But they're entrenched, especially the very large ones. It's hard. And you know, some of our internal processes really belabor the process of being responsive to community. I mean, when you have to get every little thing approved by your board and go through a marketing committee, and you know, that limits leaders' ability to be truly responsive and live in the moment. So I think they have to have a mandate, an institutional mandate, to do this work, and they have to be clear with all of their different constituencies that mistakes will be made, and you just have to learn as you go. You know, I think that's one of the things I benefit from at Penumbra is there's a lot of trust, and I know that if I make a mistake, I have the opportunity to learn from it. You know.
Yeah. Did you find that? Reminds me of a question that occurred to me as you were building this vision for the center. Did you have the support of your board? Because that's the thing that, you know, leaders of nonprofit organizations, they need support from their audiences and their board. And as you mentioned, all the constituents. How difficult of a proposition did you find this?
I mean, I think for a lot of years, so I started this in 2015. Many of the board members who came on to the board to support Penumbra Theater under Lou Bellamy were like, what? Where's the art? Like, where is the art? They kept saying that. And I'm like, the art is the way. The art is the path. And they just couldn't, you know, they were worried about losing sight of the art. When I presented to the board a deck that kind of really made the case about this region, and in particular, the incredible disparity for Black and Native folks in Minnesota, they were like, oh, okay, we get it. And I'll never forget one of my board members at the time. He said, this solves so much of what we're working on in the corporate sector. This is $1 million idea. You know, why is no one else doing this? And I think a lot of people just didn't feel the authenticity to step into the space possibly, and to bring all of these different elements together. And then lo and behold, 2 years later, Ford gifts us $2.5 million out of the blue. I mean, we didn't solicit that money.
Oh, no.
No. Okay. I mean, that was, can you imagine getting a call from?
No.
I talked to him on a Tuesday at 7 a.m. and he was like, so, and I was like, you're kidding, right? Like, where is Ashton Kutcher? Like, what's going on? And it was amazing. I told him, I said, I want your job. I want to call people and tell them I have money to give them. But so we leapt into this knowing that it was the right thing to do, thinking that there might be revenue opportunities. That was a lot of what I felt burdened by, is like, how do I make it clear that this actually can be the lifeline that the organization needs? But we couldn't have known. You know, I think we felt the inequity and knew that there were things that were possible, but we couldn't have known how much it would align with this moment, with a pandemic, with the incredible tension around race in this country right now.
Yeah. What strikes you looking ahead as sort of the greatest challenge for the goals that you're setting for the organization?
Well, there are probably quite a few, but I think the things that come to mind most immediately is this vision will only work if the community owns it along with us. We need to increase the porousness between our organization and the community. They need to feel like it is theirs. So that's one. The second piece, I think, would be if philanthropy, if it falls prey to a common trend throughout the decades, which is the bright and shiny objects. You know, they need sustained commitment to arts organizations of color. And 1 year, 3 years, 10 years of concerted transformative investment is not going to crack, 100 years of chronic disinvestment. So that equitable work needs to be sustained for a long time. And so I think we need funder partners to be in this work with us for the long haul.
Yeah. And what do you see as the reasons for optimism? What's giving you hope?
Oh my gosh, so much is giving me hope. The creative resiliency of artists that we work with. I mean, the generosity, the leadership that is everywhere in this community amongst young people, folks who are re-engaging now with a renewed sense of vigor because they see that there are as many people, kind of pulling for more racial equity in this country as there are not. I think we didn't know that a while ago. Feeling more empowered. I think the other thing that's giving me a lot of hope is that in every training that I facilitate, I am hearing people talk about mental health, about our wellness, because everyone is experiencing the strain of the pandemic. We're finally starting to realize how important it is to attend to the human being, not just the role. And that can be really powerfully healing for this country.
Yeah. Before we sign off, who are some of the artists and or plays that you feel like haven't gotten enough attention nationally, who you feel like we should be paying attention to?
Oh, wow. There are so many. The first one that comes to mind is Harrison David Rivers, a two-hander called This Bitter Earth that we produced some time ago. It is about a movement. It is about, somebody dying and the activism that has to happen and then how that lands on a couple, an interracial gay couple. I think, we have been producing Aoife Baeza's work. The Emmett Till trilogy is a powerful corollary between, what happened in 1955 to that 14-year-old boy and what happened to George Floyd, vis-a-vis like photographic evidence and then video evidence. And then still in the wake of both of those things, people saying that what happened didn't happen. So that's an excellent portal back into history, but also saying history's still alive and present with us. So The Ballad of Emmett Till, Benevolence, and The Summer in Sumner are those three plays that I just think people should look at.
Right. Yeah. And what are ways that people can support Penumbra, especially those of us who don't live in the St. Paul area?
Well, I think take an earnest interest and make a commitment to join us in racial equity work. Everybody can help. No matter where you are in terms of how experienced you are, we need everybody in this fight. If people feel so moved to donate, they can donate to our efforts. Just visit the website, poke around, learn about our initiative, ask us tough questions. I think we want to hear from people and we want to hear from people who want to partner and who are ahead of us in this work. And because we realize we're not, some of what we're building out, we're new to, and there are other people who are leading that. So,
right. Yeah. Well, I look forward to watching Penumbra develop and evolve, and as we all return to the point where we can all be in the same room again someday. So thank you so much, Sarah. Thanks for your time. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
That was Sarah Bellamy, the Artistic Director of the Penumbra Center for Racial Healing. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, I'd really appreciate it if you took the time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us grow our audience of folks who love theater as much as you and I do. Or tell a friend. You can find past episodes of Stagecraft, or subscribe, on Apple Podcasts and on all the other pod places, including Spotify and on the Broadway Podcast Network, which is another great place to find more theater for your ears. I'll be back next week with another new episode. Thanks for listening, and see you soon.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.